Side B of session number 49, recorded on August 13, 2007. We're doing Bob Marshall's top down chart, and we've been doing bottom up before, and this, the top down, is preparatory to my charts coming up. I guess we'll start next session. We've done the Global Village, the first four levels, first four sections of Bob Marshall's chart, and now we're going to do the second four paralleling the bottom-up chart, the Global Theater section. So we have here the first secret government is the solar government, which basically it has the UN as a figure, and it's an extension of the League of Nations and the Fondi. But the Fondi have been considerably weakened in the 30s because money became public property, and the private ownership of money was not as powerful. Once that collectivization via fascism, Nazism, communism, socialist, social democracies, and American Roosevelt's New Deal, that kind of collectivization comes in the 30s. And then after World War II, you have a new situation, and people are beginning to look to space. What's going to happen if we develop rocketry? So America and Russia, America and the Soviet Union fight over the Nazi rocket scientists and the intelligence knowledge that the Nazis had built up in the 30s and 40s. And so the UN replays the League of Nations, and it has a kind of secret power, but the real power is now the Secret Council 10, what I was part of, what I call the solar government, which was looking to sort of adapt to the power of moving into space, outer space, we call it. But it had to deal with new technological innovations like television and computers by the early 50s. So this was a demand on the solar government to not just focus on outer space. They had to deal with more complex forms of, quote, virtual reality that was starting to come in. The Matrix was starting to be built after World War II. So Bob Marshall is looking at, now you notice he has under figures and popular government in brackets at the top as front. Now it's still a front, but it's Earth stage. And because it's a global theater, he means that the Earth is a stage or a front. Because actually you're going discarnate via radio and then television. So the fact that people think they live on local geographical space-time zones is increasingly not the whole story. You could say it's an illusion. So the idea of having a national government becomes more of a front. Not just America as the ideal national structure before World War II, but now any nation is an organizing hologram or organizing illusion for the increasingly tiny, tiny global village, which is interfacing with the media matrix, which makes it a global theater. So nationalism spreads all over the world after World War II, and rapidly the United Nations is getting new members. And you had the movements to decolonialize the Third World in the 50s. So in the symptoms you have decentralized world government. The world government was the League of Nations, at least the secret part of the world government. And then now you're moving beyond world government into a discarnate managing of media imagery, so it decentralizes the world government. And so you have a battle between the former parts of the world government. That's the Cold War. Just like when you decentralize Western empires, you had a battle between Hitler and Stalin and England. When Napoleon was in before that, the decentralized monarchies led to all kinds of wars in Europe. After Napoleon, national wars and that. So what Bob Marshall means by the phrase decentralized is that it will become haggled over in a lot of factional, aggressive local wars happens. So you have a local war happening in the world government, and that was called the Cold War, because the secret government was the solar government.
Does this mean that power is, that certain human beings are losing power and other human beings are acquiring power?
Yeah, and it's being more focused behind the scenes on particular individuals. That's the Secret Council 10. But on the popular government front level, it's becoming a government by radio, movies, and TV. Image warfare. That was what the Cold War is, defined by McLuhan, an information warfare. Mm-hmm. Statistics and success stories of each nation competing with statistical success stories of other nations, right?
Yeah, but the statistical success stories have to be grounded in real physical successes.
Right. Well, that's the old environments are obsolete, so they work, and everybody works in them. So there's a great global abundance after World War II of hardware expansion, and that's
global for who?
Well, for everybody.
Well,
you guys go back and look.
We still have countries that have no abundance and never have. So,
but they started to get industrialized.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at newsreels on that in the 50s and up to the middle 60s, African nations, Latin American nations, it was really quite calm and organized, and that's when children around the world would collect money for UNESCO, for the United Nations Department, and it's actually, you know, some people might think the 50s were bland, at least in America, compared to what could happen under those electronic conditions. But around the world, there was a, other than the Korean War, there was a peaceful time of spreading of American influence, American products all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where groups of people started developing nations, built on some kind of industrial wealth that was coming in.
New nations were being born?
Oh, yeah. All over the place. It was a decolonialist period.
You have any idea how many nations there were before this period and then how many nations there were after?
Well, now there's 190 approximately United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was before World War II, but I think it gets up in the 30s and 40s and the 50s. And then it just explodes from 1960 to 1990.
Mm-hmm.
You're adding on 140 nations.
Because what, countries are splitting apart into national units, or?
Yeah, it's a decentralizing of the Western empires, which we had in Phase 4. You have the decentralizing of the world government, so battles between the superpowers. But that allows the national government as a popular front to spread, because it's obsolete, all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those new nations ended up being dictatorships that the leaders would use to siphon off money for their Swiss bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Flight capital starts moving around the planet. And if the global intercom that the American power structure needed from the 50s on, they would make these national governments, you know, toe the American line in the Cold War, or they'd be toppled pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So the national governments are around the world, and these new countries are changing their leadership constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Coups are normal. So it isn't really like an industrial national government of the 19th century. It's operating in a very fragile, vulnerable state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually the national cultures are being hijacked by something called the national government.
Mm. And the League of Nations don't go away. They just get absorbed into the United Nations.
Yeah, it's dismantled, and then they redo it as the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. How many nations were there in the League of Nations, do you know?
No. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 maybe, say.
Oh, okay. When does the Secret Council attend or first organized?
Well, it was responding to what was happening in 1945 pretty quickly. I mean, they always respond quickly because they're...
Well, how long have they been around?
Well, they didn't... it comes out of the Fondi, and they're kind of put on the sidelines, but still around in the 20s and 30s. They are really weak after World War II, but they do have their historical wealth. And what happened is in the 30s, the Americans started, and especially after World War II, they started spreading their wealth around through foreign aid. And so the American government was very powerful in the world economy. You have the IMF, the World Bank, and the old Bank for International Settlements. These economic structures of visual space lent money all over the world, because now the world is a tiny place, and it's a theater, so money has to circulate. So credit cards come in, and money, cash is flowing pretty good, and that gives American government and industrial corporate interests global power.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was, in the late 70s, with the electronic speed-up, the digital beginning of the digital speed-up, all the loans that the American government had given out cannot be repaid. And so the Secret Council of Ten is brought back in the early 80s, because they're the only ones...
Who brings them back in? I mean,
what'd you say?
Is there a deeper power structure that rotates them back in, or do they...
No, you didn't hear the reason they come back in is that they, in the early 80s, are the only ones who have any gold and credit and solid-based money.
Right.
Because they never give out loans.
Oh.
They only invest.
Oh, I see. So they become... They naturally become powerful again.
Yeah, because they're the only ones with money, so to speak, in the traditional sense, because the American money evaporates in the late 70s due to the computerization of the global economy.
So are they...
my point now, so the Secret Council 10 is up on all the developments that are going on and monitoring them and doing their industrial espionage so they know what's going on, but they're sitting on the sidelines basically from World War II till the early 80s.
Oh, okay.
Because the, in simple terms, the Rockefeller Morgan Empire is running the show.
Up until the early 80s.
Yeah.
And based on the fact of credit and paper money and like that.
And they're loaning money because they need to circulate money.
Mm-hmm.
They generate money in cash, so they spread it all around the planet.
Right, and they get interest off of their spreading it around.
Yeah. So it was a natural progression.
So it's growing, but they don't have hard assets in gold and like that.
No, they do, but it's like an early version of the virtual economy. They are building on it, but sneaking up on them is the digital black hole.
Yeah.
So the hardware communism of the 19th century that McCune talks about becomes software communism in the 20th century. Everybody's discarnate, engaging in all kinds of media of entertainment and information, and money becomes software at that point. I mean, when you have the guaranteed income and money becomes public property, then it moves into credit.
Well, everybody's... I need a point distinction here. I mean, is everyone discarnate, or would it be more accurate to say everyone's playing in the discarnate space or field?
Everybody's discarnate. If you're using television, you're discarnate. If you're using the telephone, you know, when you're on the telephone, just like we are,
yeah,
you're everywhere at once.
Yeah, but I'm also right here in my corporeal body, and when I hang up the phone, I won't be necessarily participating in the discarnate space unless I watch TV or pick up the phone.
Yeah,
even though I recognize, you know, Bob knowledge, that I've been mutated, by the discarnate space, regardless of whether I'm on the phone or in front of the TV.
You'd be discarnate if you never used television or telephones or anything, or computers, because your environment around you is affected, and your environment is made up of certain older media, and people around you are using newer media, they are affected by the newer discarnate environments.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly you can't get any jobs in your little town. The globalized economy moved them somewhere else, moved them to China.
Yeah, but I'm still a corporeal man with no job. We'll talk about this more later.
Yeah, but that's only a small part of yourself now.
Yeah.
In other words, before the discarnate state, you had a body and it interacted with its environment and it could see what was affecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've moved to, in the discarnate electric environment, you've moved into invisible technologies affecting you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're affecting the other media, older media around you.
Sure. They're affecting my environment, and to the degree that I'm integrated with my environment, they're affecting me.
Yeah, it's affecting all the second nature, all the technologies which make up your environment, technological environment. And then on top of that, there's a satellite environment that starts happening in the late 50s, early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So you're inside that. So you can be actively or passively in the discarnate state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Walter Cronkite is actively in the discarnate state. He's getting the same effects as you are. It's just that he's in a visible role within it.
Mm-hmm.
You're in an invisible role. You're passively discarnate.
Yeah.
So, when you have, in the global theater...
Because I'm a human being. I mean, I look at this dog here, and it looks pretty much like the same dog it would have looked like 100 years ago. I don't think it knows it's been affected or knows the difference.
It's affected by its environment. It has to put up with the noise of the television set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever's in your environment, it's involved with.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, what happens is the technological government in the first phase of the secret solar government with the UN in brackets... So the solar government is the real secret part, and the UN is seen as a beneficent organization, and the real power seems to be in the popular national governments. But the UN is orchestrating things around the world behind the scenes of the nations, and then the solar government is monitoring that and waiting to be powerful when it's necessary.
Right. The solar government being the retrieval of the...
A continuation of the Illuminati, the Venice, the Fondi, and the world government.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a continuation here. So the technological government is radio and movies, and you have the Cold War
and
TV.
Of course, TV's coming in 45. It's just not as environmental.
It didn't come in until late 40s, early 50s, as an environment where people are starting to share in it.
Right.
So you have Cold War, TV War, World War III, decentralized world government. So,
technological government also includes the atomic bomb. That's pretty obvious.
No, that's a new environment.
Well, it was Nagasaki and Hiroshima were 1945, so it had made its impact by 1945.
Yeah, but then it becomes a environment that has to be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And so deals are made around the world. That's where there really was a solar government. In terms of the superpowers supposedly are engaged in the Cold War, but they are decentralized, and that's an image, that's a symptom. In actual fact, there's a group part of the Secret Council 10 is part of this, but it's more of the United Nations and that power structure. They're arranging for no nuclear war to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Americans went around and told whoever in the world that if you do anything against us, we'll nuke your whole country immediately. So it's like caveman reality.
Mm-hmm.
So they, and there were agreements between the Soviet Union and the corporations of the United States, because they didn't want to have the world blow up. That would ruin their business. So they would exchange spies and agents' names and and monitor very rigorously the distribution of atomic bombs or the materials to make them.
Yeah. And was that being monitored by a faction that was not that was not either American or Russian, but it was some other international?
Well, it was a subset of the Solar Government.
Yeah.
And the Solar Government is monitoring it, so there are the elite of the world government is doing that monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond the United Nations.
But the Solar Government
monitored that.
Right. Now, the Solar Government, what nationalities, racial profiles are composed in this, of the Solar Government?
Western.
Mm-hmm.
There were four factions. The North American faction, the British faction, the European faction, and the Asian faction.
Yeah, the Asian faction being the Russia primarily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you had, to simplify it, I used to say that the North American faction was the Rockefellers. The British faction was the European Fondi gathered around the city of London. So a popular name for that is the Rothschilds. And even though it's other people no one's ever heard of. And then the European faction is around Prince Turnen Taxis. That's T-H-U-R-N-U-N-D, German for and. Taxis, T-A-X-I-S. Prince Turnen Taxis was a German control point. And then the Asian faction was around a family named Romanov. Not the Romanov that ran the Tsarist regime in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the four factions, and there were about 40 people on the council, and sort of like 10 people for each quarterly faction.
Was Romanov affiliated with the Bolsheviks?
They go back further than that, and they overlap with Chinese power.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, you didn't hear of Turnen Taxis. You didn't hear of Romanov. You didn't hear much of the Rothschilds.
Mm-hmm.
You did hear about the Rockefellers.
Yeah.
In the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the Rockefellers were the youngest of the four factions. But on the popular front level,
the Rockefellers didn't come down through the Illuminati, Venice, and Fondo. They were self-made industrialists.
Yeah, they're part of America in the fourth level on the chart. America's a new mixed corporate media, you know, modern technological virtual reality phenomenon that Europe can't control. So the Rockefellers ride in on that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the youngest. They definitely didn't come from Europe, and they had to deal with the secret factions once they'd got on that level. So that's why, you know, the Rockefellers, they're more in public, they're newer, and they also come out of that democratic tribalism of the United States, the software communist era. So that's why we know that name more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the power of being in the technological front, the cutting edge of the technological envelope.
Right. They understood how to use the new technology to their advantage.
Not really. They blew it in the 70s, but they just had the technology. And they had the fact that America seemed to be the hologram of choice. It represented the most abundant and free environment that was an ideal for people all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the charisma of the Soviet Union, which was an ideal for other types of people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more less industrialized cultures, like China.
They become displaced by the Bilderbergers and the Trilateralists?
The Bilderbergers were in the interface between the Secret Council 10 and the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Bilderbergs made up by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands and David Rockefeller, formed in 1954.
Oh.
So it's getting pretty. Remember, I've said this before, that in the intelligence agencies, the solar government, one step down, called the United Nations, was made up of four or five elements in one room. The Nazis, the Freemasons, the Bolsheviks, the Jesuits. So you got the Jesuits, the Freemasons, the Bolsheviks, the Nazis, and then the Mossad of Israel. Those five intelligence factions are all in the same room because it's a very tiny global village, and they're controlling things that are not visible in the global theater.
All in the same room, meaning that they're cooperating?
Yeah, well, they're forced to. It's because that level of bureaucratic control is a tight, thin, marginal form of bureaucracy. Because the real power is in the bottom up, at least in the media imagery.
Mm-hmm.
President Kennedy, that's one reason why he got assassinated. His power was so big via TV that it threatened even the confidence of the secret puppet string guys on the margins.
Right.
And remember, money, if you think of money as a source of power, there ain't no money that's private property after World War II. It's credit.
Mm.
Everybody has access to money.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to at least be in a welfare state.
Right.
So
these five factions don't realize that they're losing power to the bottom-up effect of the hidden ground of new technology, but the Secret Council of Ten and Marshall McLuhan recognize this.
Yeah. Now, the Secret Council of Ten, nobody completely understood it. Probably McLuhan understood it better than anybody, because he had the freedom as an academic to think far into the future, look at the effects. Most people are harassed. I mean, the five intelligence agencies I'm talking about, they are trying to maintain the power that they have, and they're too busy dealing with day-to-day issues and infighting to see the big picture and the big effect. They're harassed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, they're harassed. And because they represent an old technology, an old bureaucracy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So, moving along, we get to the interesting sixth level, where the secret government is not a person, it's a technology, the laser beam.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that's also the beginning of the Android meme, 1960.
Hmm.
And so the popular government is not national. This is the front. It's the solar stage. It's the space race. It's going to the moon, going to Mars.
Why the laser beam? Because it has the capacity to knock out the other guy's satellite? Or what's the deal with the laser beam?
Yeah, you could have the particle beam that Dr. Beter talks about in the late 70s.
Well, the particle beam, the late 70s.
So what you have with the laser beam, it's such an incredible technology, and all that can be done with it and developed from it.
Well, such as?
Well, look,
I know by the 80s we're starting to get like the digital technology of when does the CD compact disc,
the laser disc is the middle 80s.
That's the middle 80s. So now we're actually using the laser beam to transmit and read data, and it becomes very powerful, and it becomes a consumer item, and that really, you know, is a big change in the technological matrix of the, even at the consumer level. But here in 1960, I'm still a little perplexed as to why the invention of the laser beam becomes more powerful than the United Nations.
Because the secret government realizes with this kind of technology that the breakthroughs are going to come. It's technology, and whoever has the latest technology is the key to power. So it's not an administrative opinion or bureaucratic control of human beings. It's whoever gets the newest technology and implements it.
Yeah, so that's, it's still the people that, the faction that wields it, that is in power.
Well, the point that Bob Marshall's trying to make, which he got from me, is that it doesn't matter who wields power, because the old bureaucracy gets so marginalized that anybody could monitor it and be in that situation and have reflex reactions that preserve the interests of the bureaucracy in relation to whatever new effects happen.
Well, not anybody can monitor it. I mean, the most powerful use of the laser beam is if you could actually shoot and broadcast a laser beam from a satellite, which I don't actually know if they had the power source to be able to do something like that. But if they did, then only people with satellites would have power.
Right.
Well, that narrows the playing field considerably.
Yeah, well, then, this, remember, it's a small team that's running the world. Okay, that's the Secret Council of Ten, plus the small team in the United Nations, and then the small team through the banking institutions for running national currencies.
Mm-hmm.
So the tiny team is just sitting there like shepherds watching this global market expand all over the planet. And this is in the 50s. And you're sitting there, and all you have to remember is, well, I'm a human being, and I'm in charge here. And it's an illusion, because you're a robot. When a new technology comes in, it immediately determines what you got to do with it. You got to implement it. So the coup is staged by the technology. This is more obvious in the second half of the 20th century than it was earlier. Up to World War II, people thought that they could control technology.
Mm-hmm. And then McLuhan use the term that, you know, the human beings become servo mechanisms of their technology?
He said they always were, but we become conscious of it on the Secret Council of Ten. And so the meaning of the laser beam is we recognize that the technology is the government. So why did the authorities in the Air Force and around the White House in 47 suppress the Roswell incident? Because they realized they actually showed the technology that had crashed and had a press conference and people around the world saw it. Somebody, somewheres, might be able to figure out what that technology is.
Mm-hmm.
Not likely, but they might. And so they brought in the National Security Act a few weeks after Roswell in September 47, that period. And we've talked about this before. At that point, you were able to lie to the nation, even though you're an American, because you are feeling justified on behalf of national security that you cannot allow the technology to be seen, because some other country could get that technology, and if they got it and invented it or back-engineered it, they would be immediately a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
And would topple the bureaucratic status quo as of that point. So you see that...
I think I heard somebody talk about the National Security Act 1947, and they said that it didn't allow for... the intelligence agencies to lie except under the circumstance that the president at his discretion could give orders, I guess, that were considered top secret or not. If the president decided that he wanted to fudge things one way or the other, then he could do that, and then it would trickle down through the agencies. They were just following orders, but they weren't.
And that's because power under TV conditions moved into the word that makes the market. So as I said before, the White House was the world government in TV terms from the 50s on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the battle you have now, how much the popular Congress can affect the executive privilege.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a battle for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
How much, and it's a symptom of power shrinking to one person or one image. And if it's just one person who's the president, then that reflects the shrinking of power on the secret level, represented by the Secret Council of Ten.
Mm-hmm.
The bureaucracy gets tinier and tinier, and more nebulous or ethereal.
Mm-hmm.
yet the popular expression of that is the TV news press conference.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the president bypassed even the national security legislation in 1947 if he determined that something had to be done.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that movie Wrong is Right?
No.
Yeah, Sean Connery, 1982, about, and it's very interesting because it's sort of a thriller and a comedy, but in it, Sean Connery's a journalist who's finding out more and more. So at one point, he's talking to the president, they're going down the corridor, if I remember this right, and the president says, you need to do this, and you're going to do that. And the guy says, no, I can't do that, I'm a journalist. He says, that would violate my professional guidelines. He doesn't matter. I've just drafted you into the White House, and you're operating under a national security situation. You're going to do this. So the guy had to do it. The president drafted him. And he just wanted him to be in on this little deal, the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So to the degree that Sean Connery wanted to remain an American citizen, he had to do that.
Right.
But the president, the point is, it showed the president making the executive fiat action right there on the spot by himself.
Yeah.
But he represented the country. So he was doing his impersonal role of protecting the country.
Right.
And it was leading up to some, you know, Middle East war or something, the crisis.
Right. I mentioned to you a while back, I saw a movie that was, I think, around early 1960s called Failsafe.
Yeah.
And in that movie, you can see it takes place between the Pentagon, the White House, and the war room. And in the war room, they're monitoring nuclear subs and nuclear airplane carriers from satellites. And everything is all computerized and automated. And they have this fail-safe system that's very complex in order to keep an accident from occurring. But the fail-safe system breaks down, and you begin to see that the machine is bigger than the human beings operating it. And in that movie, it has like a, you know, tragic ending. But I can see how power gets out of the hands of human beings under those circumstances. But I still don't see how the laser beam consolidates all this power, because we're still talking about. In the 1960s, we're talking about the size of a military in terms of numbers of ground troops. We're talking about the numbers of tanks. We're talking about the numbers of airplanes and ships, and we're talking about the numbers of bombs, nuclear bombs. I don't see what the laser beam becomes the focus of fulcrum of power.
It's because you couldn't use a nuclear bomb. Nobody was going to have a war. That's why Korean and Vietnam wars are fought in the backyards of the world just to keep that old military hardware circulating.
But what's the laser beam got to do with that?
That represents a new kind of power and whatever the technology can be used for. It alters all the previous media.
Yeah,
so they realize that power
is... being specific, you're being pretty vague about this laser beam.
No. The medium is the message. Look at the laser beam as a symbol of realizing that... This is what the Secret Council 10 did. They monitored rigorously, day 24/7, any new developments on any form of knowledge. Because if someone could come up with something that could immediately threaten the whole world, then that is a new fulcrum point.
If they're doing that through eavesdropping, they're using radio signals, telephones, spies.
And they're in the labs. They're not just using technology. They're right there in the labs, in the companies.
Yeah. So I still don't see where the laser beam comes in, but I don't want to keep pressing.
The laser beam means a new technology. A new technology upsets the power balance.
Oh, okay. So we're not literally talking about coherent light streaming in a certain direction and boring a hole through a piece of metal.
No, but that's all potentially. As soon as a new technology is made, people start speculating what can develop from it.
Yeah.
That's what the Secret Council 10 did. They studied the effects of any new situation,
yeah.
And they had to find out what was going on.
Right. Like you say, the laser beam then becomes the forerunner of the particle beam, which we could see you could have power with that if you had one on the moon.
Yeah, and you don't know how soon it's going to be developed.
Mm-hmm.
So you take LSD. There's something that inspired people. They thought that would influence people in the 50s. Captain Al Hubbard running around trying to turn on the elite. He thought we could bring in a new world of peace or whatever if we could turn on the right powerful people. So there was a new technology, LSD.
Yeah, well, I guess he didn't understand set and setting, because not everybody's going to have a peaceful trip when you
right.
dose them with LSD.
But they were doing it within an elite circle of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Henry Luce of Time Magazine took it.
Oh.
Cary Grant did.
Right.
Kennedy did.
Yeah.
So,
well, in your diary, Android Memes Xenocrony, you point out that what's happening on a deeper level, and McLuhan knows this, is that they're learning how to tweak the structure of language itself, and that's has a more powerful effect on the environment and all of us collectively, and so on, than dosing people with LSD.
Right, but the point is that people don't foresee that. They, when Huxley and the other guys, Hoffman, had this LSD, they're talking about it. And Captain Al Hubbard gets inspired, and he thinks he can change people with it, change power. That's what he's projecting on it, because nobody can totally foresee the effects of a new technology. They just get excited by it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get inspired, you get excited by it. So someone, if you invent the laser beam, there's going to be all kinds of wacky speculation about what this will lead to.
Sure.
And you don't know where it is going to lead to, so you study it rigorously.
Yeah.
And you probably are way off the mark in what you're thinking about it, but it creates a new panic.
Yeah. Well, you know, people were conditioned to think of, you know, all the outer space stuff since the 1950s. Now, the laser beam is like the first breakthrough to a kind of almost like a alien intelligence technology,
yep.
in a way. And of course, you don't get the laser beam until you get the transistor, and so all of that is, you know, a composite part of the term laser beam.
Yeah, the transistor comes in 1956.
Yeah.
And then you have a whole new culture that comes out of that, the rock and roll.
Yeah.
So that alters the family structure.
I remember, just trivial personal side note, I got my grandmother, I got it for my birthday when I was, I think, 6 years old, my first Sony AM radio that was the size of a pack of cigarettes and made out of transistors, and that was right when the Beatles were starting to hit the scene.
Yeah.
So those two things came in together.
So that was pretty exciting getting that.
Oh, yeah. Getting something the size of a pack of cigarettes that played the Beatles. Yeah.
It probably wrecked your school marks.
Yeah, probably. I used to fall asleep with it under my pillow at night and listen to baseball games.
Right, so you wouldn't get a good enough sleep and be falling asleep in class the next day.
Yeah.
Therefore not taking in the information.
Yeah.
You're lucky that all that information was obsolete quickly, though.
Yeah.
You didn't need it. But certain habits were not built in. Attention habits, you know what I mean? Literate attention habits.
Yeah.
So
well,
we
didn't have the 10-second attention span, the MTV attention span at that time.
Yeah, you didn't?
Well, it was culturally we didn't have
that. You had a 2-minute attention span, which was looking very bad from the people before World War II.
Yeah, from the literate people.
Or radio era, or even pre-radio era.
Yeah.
So you have here the technological government obviously is television. And now because the world is the solar figure, or the figure inside a solar stage, then the idea of world pollution comes in, or industrial pollution. So pollution is one of the symptoms, noticing pollution. And then you have the decentralizing of the solar government. And that is the fight that Dr. Beter kind of lays out.
Mm-hmm.
So the factions within the solar government start to bicker
mm-hmm.
in the period from 1960 to 77.
Right.
And
so let's finish up whatever we have to say about level 6. We'll do level 7 and level 8 next time.
Yeah, well, just to jump in, we got another minute?
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to say that the next technology, the hidden ground, is mass man. Which, in other words, it's not a technology, it's the image of the White House or the image of who runs the press conference that determines reality? Mass man, and also, mass man is all the huge media environments that are now shrinking but expanding around the globe. That is the real economy. And so that at that point, the popular figure is solar government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Star Wars. And the technological government is computer, and so you decentralize the universal government. And that's the left hemisphere versus the right hemisphere. The central nervous system was extended by television and the electronic. That is now obsolesced by the extension of the planet, which is the solar structure. And so the parts of the brain that were the central nervous system have a war, left hemisphere versus the right hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into the second coming. And as ground, the secret government is the second coming. Now, what would that be in terms of the Illuminati? It could be the Antichrist. And the figure of popular government is the whole universe. That's Stephen Hawking land. That's aliens. And the whole universe is communicating to us. And the technological government is a satellite. And that is the previous environment. Because the new environment is somewhere between mass man and the second coming. The second coming being a period of rapid change. And so the symptoms in the second coming phase are devil versus God, state versus church, and endless Armageddon and apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done our 44 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's just, we'll go back and go from there into my chart. We'll do 7 and 8 in a little more detail, so you might come up with some more questions about it.
Sounds good.
But it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty predetermined and mechanical, the phases that Bob Marshall's laying out here.
Yeah.
But there's a truth to it.
Yeah, and
when you're looking,
but it's a little more obvious than when we get to like the formula and the tiny note chart, because you can kind of see everything sort of happening in, you know, in sequence, in phase. When we get to the formula and the tiny note, now we're starting to get into sort of effects precede causes.
Yeah.
And so it gets a little more, takes a little bit more effort to understand it, I think.
Yeah, it's not so linear.
Yeah, not so linear.
And when I say there's a bit of truth in this, it's got truth on the big pattern level, the macro level we're looking at here.
Mm-hmm.
In these two charts made by Bob Marshall.
Yeah, on the macro level as opposed to the more, what, detailed level that the other charts go into?
Yeah, the micro level, like
micro level.
The people you know in your life and the people that interfered with your life or made it better.
Yeah, so the other charts are going to be a little more personal in a way?
Yes, it goes towards that, but not completely.
Yeah.
It is a macro level, but the macro becomes holopathized.
Yeah.
We'll end with that word.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot, Scott.
Very good. Bye for now.